Good morning, y'all. This is IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Ian Boyd has joined me today for our regularly scheduled Wednesday show, where we talk schemes, football, inside the lines type stuff. Good morning, AR. Good morning to you, Roaster, as well. So last week, we dabbled into how the spread could cause issues for this Texas team when we were talking. I think that was on our, when we were talking about the secondary on that show. So Ian went ahead and thought about it and wrote out a whole piece on, we don't have a ton of spread teams, but we have one really important one that we could face in OU, that's for sure. And then potentially the playoffs, we always have to think about this mysterious team that we could face. But with the change in the secondary and all that kind of stuff, we need to figure out how our defense could match up.
You want a preliminary list of spread teams to watch out for in the playoffs?
Yeah, sure.
Arizona State.
Okay.
Clemson. LSU. And this could also be the SEC title for some of these, obviously. Auburn. Maybe Ohio State, but I kind of think they're going to end up being – they're usually not, like, that spready. Because they usually are more like a kind of run game and play action is more their deal, rather than, like, spread you out and start hitting stuff. Okay, here's the sleeper one that I've been studying recently. I think USC might be a lot better than people think.
Okay.
I think USC is a team you could potentially meet in the playoffs, and they would be dangerous because of this stuff that we're going to talk about.
Cool. And then on our schedule, it's going to be
Oklahoma
and Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Oklahoma, and then, of course, Levy, who came from Oklahoma recently, too.
I don't know Mississippi State's roster super well. It seems like they got poached a bit, but they're probably more dangerous than we think. I'll report back.
Generally, the year two bump is not bad either. But they got shaping. They lost the quarterback we played, who I like, Van Buren, to LSU. I thought that was a huge loss for them. I don't know.
Yeah. So
if I was NIL, I would not let that happen.
I think he's going to be awesome.
Yeah. All right.
You reminded me a little bit of Trayvon Boykin.
Okay. I remember when I broke him down, I liked him a lot, man. And I don't know how you lose him. So that's going to be rough. All right, so we had a pretty good answer to this, fairly good answer, right? The reality is we didn't face a ton of killer offenses last year, right? So we had a great defense paired against not great offenses in the regular season.
Let's say that when we're talking spread here, we're specifically talking teams that can put four guys on the field that will line up on the line and can run vertical routes.
Yeah, and generally spread out.
Anybody that has the capacity to get four wide from 11 personnel, that's what we're talking about.
Cool. And then we had an answer last year with the third down dime package. We did really well there. But
we had an answer on third down.
Yeah. So it's like so we need to figure out how that looks too, because you lose a Makuba who's really good in coverage, all that kind of stuff, right? And then so we need to see if we can cover these guys. When we're saying four guys spread out that are credible pass catchers, including a tight end usually, you need to devote resources to each one of those four. And we'll have to see with Jelani McDonald maybe at nickel, probably not as strong in coverage, even though he's awesome. And so those are the things we got to kind of figure out. So let's, Ian, what's the challenge of the spread?
The challenge is that if they put four guys out side of the formation where they can run routes, and the tight end, sometimes he can do that and still be attached to the core. Sometimes he needs to be flexed out. Either way, whatever. When the offense puts four guys out, you can either stay in a too high coverage and walk a linebacker out to cover them. but now they're covering somebody with a linebacker, and that's not always great. And if they have a good spread run game from four wide, now you have to defend that without your linebacker, and that's also not great. So that's one solution. The other solution is you play single high, you drop a safety down, and then you've got corner on outside receiver, nickel on slot, safety on tight end or second slot, and corner on wide receiver. So you just match up. The problem with single and your linebackers get to stay in the box, so that part's great. And you get your deep safety. The problem with this one is if there are any matchups, any of those one-on-one matchups, if they're not good, then you can get into real trouble. Especially if your corners are overmatched, then they can just start dropping bombs on you. And you can't use the safeties to help because you need your safeties to play the slots in the middle of the field.
So how do you answer? So do you want to look at the two high version or the one high version there?
Whichever is first.
Okay. I think it's your two high here that is first. Let's see. Let me do my classic zoom in where I lose it immediately. All right. Washington, good example.
There's a couple examples just like this from this game.
We're in the two high here.
Yep.
And if you see, the problem is this corner gets out leveraged because this safety has to respect this player coming down the field. So yep, he's able to pull that safety away. And then at that point, the corner, sorry, I'm blocking this part, but there's corner here and the receiver's inside of him. So he has to follow the receiver, which is a big issue. And that's how they're able to out leverage us here. And
is it even the slot? Is it the slot that does it? It's the slot.
I'll have to see. It's blocked. Yeah, it's the slot.
Yeah, so he's super out leveraged.
Super out leveraged.
And they're in a zone coverage rather than a different one.
If you don't want your nickel or whoever covering deep and you want the safety as help on top, that's the problem. You just send someone to negate the safety that he has to follow, because if he doesn't follow him, the safety doesn't follow him, that guy's wide open. And at that point, you have a player up here that can out leverage you. So that's a weakness to the spread in too high right here. No good. Okay. Well, two high is sketchy, so why don't we just play single high? Let's see. Because when you play single high, well, you know.
I lost you, Connor.
You hear me now?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, cool. Good?
Yep.
Okay, cool. So if you play one high, now your safety can only patrol to the hashes. That means your outside receivers with their corners are going to be one-on-one. And if their receivers are better than your corners, now you're in trouble too against the spread. And that was fairly good coverage too. That was just a really nice ball.
This is one of those plays from that game, though, where it's like, yes, that's defended pretty well, but a good team and a good receiver like that, that's that they can hit that consistently, unless you drive them off their route. Like, you can't just say, well, coin flip, to get back to our heads versus tails debate, gambler fallacy. You can't just say like, oh, they'll miss it a couple of these times and we'll get back. The variance will even out in our favor. It may not even out in your favor at all. And it's probably worse than a coin flip if you can't get the guy off his line.
Well, we also, it's always funny because we just call them 50-50 balls, but they're almost never 50-50. You know, some quarterbacks complete 50%, but most quarterbacks are completing like 35 to 40%. So even kind of by nature, it's a 35 to 40% ball favoring the defense. But if you have a quarterback like Penix who is just dropping dimes too, that's a big factor. But you'll see here, notice how Penix is not reading anything at this point. He has seen that there's a single high safety pre-snap, and he auto throws outside.
Yeah.
Bam. So that was all by alignment that he knew they had that matchup. Okay, so we've looked at what can happen to your safeties. Your safeties, there's several concepts that are designed in quarters or anything to pull that safety out of there, and then you can get other plays. So two high is not always an answer, even though you kind of base think it is. And then one high, you're susceptible on the outside as well. So
the coverage doesn't matter against four wide if the all four are legitimate receiving threats. Like, and the tight end really just needs to be able to run routes from anywhere on the field and catch the ball. Because no matter what you do, they can just play with his alignment to get their best receiver the matchup you don't want.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard to have enough schematic diversity to answer these offenses. There's just always something, because your safeties and your linebackers are going to get into trouble against somebody. And or if they have guys, your corners just can't play one-on-one, then something's going to break down somewhere.
Yeah. And it's especially if you have a quarterback in command with a lot of reps in the offense that can spot matchups immediately, you're going to have some trouble. You just got to interfere at that point. Just hit the receiver site before the ball gets there. You can get away with that. But also, man, anything over 15 yards, just interfere if you're not going to be able to catch it. If you're not going to be able to stop it, because college football incentivizes. Yeah. So it's like the NFL punishes you for that. Like if you can give up a 60-yard spot foul, college you don't. So you're incentivized to interfere as a DB if you know you're going to get beat on anything over 15 yards. And it's not super taught that way. There's some teams you'll see it where they're clearly being coached to do that, but it's always an exploit that I don't see enough. Because it's
some teams, the better way is actually to do it before the ball's in the air.
Yep, get them off their route or very early. Do it. Yeah, I agree.
And you push the lines there, and you can do a lot of damage. Michigan State, when they had their no-fly zone press quarters deal with Narduzzi, they were like just all up in everybody's business, always pushing and elbowing. You can do it and not get a foul if you I'm in NBA Finals mode. You can avoid the flag if you know how to position yourself and get your hips and your shoulder. Mm-hmm. Then you can hit them off their line and it's not even a flag. It's totally fine.
And this is like
the refs, the ball's in the air. And then when the ball's in the air, they're trying to run through you to get to the ball, and they can't.
Well, you can even do it if the ball's in the air if it's early enough in the trajectory, because we have the concept of the ball wasn't catchable. And I can't remember who it was last year, maybe Georgia. I can't remember who it was. They were pass interfering very early in the trajectory, and the refs would basically say it wasn't catchable. And it's like, well, it wasn't catchable because they interfered earlier in the thing. But there's like kind of that exploit too, where if it's earlier in the route, beyond even the 5 yards, you're good part, early in the throw or stuff like that, the refs have a problem projecting where the player would be. And so they'll just assume that it was uncatchable when it wouldn't have been uncatchable.
Well, they also watch viewers throw some of the other ones, and they're like, you were never going to catch that.
Yeah, but even across the sport, I see it. Like, if I was a DB coach, I would be, as close to interfering every chance I got. Especially if it's deep in your beat, man, just tackle him. It's better than the giving up 40 yards. I'd rather take 15.
You ready for my local reference?
Sure, go for it.
Liberty Hill played a lot of press quarters this last year, and they would do that with their corners. They would teach them to, like, just jam them up early and get them off. And they're like, our safeties cannot be helping you guys out. These guys have so much already, or we're drowning in the middle of the field. So you guys just do whatever you got to do outside to survive.
Yeah. And it's very common. There's teams where there's two things I'll notice. And then this is just a style. You'll notice the teams that are coached to hold on the offensive line, because like you said, and I've talked to refs, they'll break the game occasionally to call it. They're not going to call it every play. That makes them too much. It destroys the whole flow of the game. So I notice offensive lines that are like literally their arms are going outside, like they're training in practice. And then I notice the teams that are coaching their DBs to interfere intelligently early in the routes, sneaky ways like that, you know, quick arm pulls, those kind of things. Whenever they beat you, grab onto their hips, use their hip as the momentum to pull you closer to them. There's all these little tricks of the trade, and they're super effective, and the refs won't call them. And so that's why it is frustrating on offense. You love it when it's your defense that's smart like that and taking advantage, because the offense already has so many advantages. I'm generally not going to cry foul on DBs. That's a hard position, but it is frustrating when you play a team that does that well.
I thought Georgia did it fine. I didn't really think that they were even pushing the envelope that much.
There was one team last year that I can't, and I'll have to go back and look, that was really good at it.
Tim Duncan used to have this trip, especially as he got older, where he would stay on the ground so he wouldn't draw a foul, keep his hands up. But then his offhand that wasn't like the contest hand, he'd put it on the other player's hip, just kind of push down when they're trying to jump.
Yeah.
And he'd get away with that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. When it happens to me, I'm mad about it, but I respect it. It's a good technique, man. And like I said, receivers and offenses already have a ton of advantages. We can't just keep neutering what defensive players can do to counteract these.
Can you hear this AR comment about the gloves?
Yeah.
I love when teams wear white gloves when Texas wears icy weights. Whites, you know they are going to hold. LOL. That's such a clever. You should absolutely do that if you're a Texas opponent.
But yeah. Who was it? Belichick? Was Belichick getting onto his player? He was it was Julian Edelman, yeah, where he was like, you're wearing I don't even think it was Edelman because it'd be on defense, but it's like, why are you wearing red gloves versus this team? Your hands are going to stand out. There's an art of holding the offensive line. It's happening.
I dropped my kid off at this my oldest kid at this flag football camp. He's training for next season. And I swear, so many of these kids come out there wearing gloves because they think it looks cool.
It does look cool. I'll give them that.
You watch these kids like try to throw the ball when they're wearing gloves. I had this one kid on my team last year that I'd get tired of whoever was playing quarterback, and I'd be like, you get over here, you try something.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, hold on, let me take off my gloves. And I was like, why are you wearing gloves? We're not even going to throw you the ball.
The coolest thing ever were visors when I was younger. So like somebody would get like, I think they were like, I can't remember if they were Oakley or whatever, but like they were, if there'd be like three kids that would have visors, not practical, but they look sweet. The visor trends kind of died off, but it was all about, you got to wear, this is Under Armour before they got big. You had to have Under Armour, dude. And you had to wear the sleeves and you had to have a visor to be cool.
I coached with this one guy, his son, we called his son Touchdown Tommy.
Yeah.
And he had like the big visor shades and he was so little, but he was so freaking good.
Yeah. So
when he did it, it looked cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You really got to earn the visor.
Yeah. You got to start, you got to make some plays before you, the arm sleeve, all that.
This is kind of the mismatch here of why the spread works versus defensive personnel. And that's because they all have core competencies that can be exploited, or they have, like we said, a split division of labor where they're favored or weighted more towards a run, like a linebacker. So for instance, cornerbacks in the nickel, they excel at man coverage. Safeties are chosen for their ability at helping out over the top or in zone. So safeties drop back and keep eyes on things, or they're keeping an eye on a certain receiver with the help of a corner. And then you have linebackers are chosen predominantly, it's changing now, but predominantly for their ability to run and hit around the box. So whenever you put a linebacker into a pass situation, that's not their natural element. Now we're seeing that change a little bit, but that's generally the issue. So that's how you can put safeties in uncomfortable situations and you can put linebackers in uncomfortable situations.
Yep, that's it.
And you can theoretically put corners and stars in uncomfortable situations when you force them to play zone and they're from a more aggressive man background too.
Also, real quick, this is much better from 11 personnel than 10 personnel. So people are always like, Texas should play with four receivers instead of a tight end. if you play with four receivers, they have an excuse to trade out one of these guys that's not a run defender for a coverage guy, and then you lose this entire advantage. What you want is the tight end. Like, Andrew Beck was so good at this for Texas in 2018 because he was like a legitimate blocker, but Herman would move him all over the place. And so he'd like line up way out wide, and the other team would be like, okay, either we're going to have our linebacker follow him way out there, or we're going to waste a corner on him. And either way, Lil Jordan Humphrey is going to be running free in the middle of the field. So that's like the ideal blend, is either the really good receiving tight end who's a solid blocker, or maybe even better sometimes, the really solid blocker who knows how to line up and run simple routes from a dozen different alignments.
And also, too, like when you're in 10, you lose a lot of your lead concepts in the run game, too.
The run game is totally... Yeah. Yes.
So you want the tight end that can do both, because you can run credibly with all your schemes, and then you can flex them out and still have an advantage on a linebacker as well. So, yeah, 10 personnel is fun. I get it, but I agree with Ian. You want to keep a tight end on the field almost all the time, and that's why Sark doesn't do it, even when we have, you know, enough receivers to play 10. All right, before we keep going, Ian, I want you guys to hear a word from Academy Sports and Outdoors.
Academy.
In honor of your service and support for our country, Academy Sports and Outdoors is offering military and first responders 10% off your purchase, both in your local Academy Sports and Outdoors and online from April 27th through July 4th. Exclusions do apply. Visit academy.com/discount for details. All right, what was that, Ian?
I said Academy.
Oh, okay. I thought you were doing your fine. Whoa, wait, 1 second. All right. We've explained the problems with the spread, how it can affect defenses, what personnel you want for all that kind of stuff. But now we need to talk specifically about Texas's defense, why we had a good spread defense last year, even though later on Clemson was able to really test us there. So let's kind of break down what happened last year with our defensive personnel and then when we got exposed to Tad.
Last year, Texas could play a lot of single high. That was their main solution. And it worked extremely well against everybody except Ohio State. They didn't even really try it that much against Ohio State. And Clemson. And the reason it worked super well is that Makubo was basically like a second nickel. So instead of...
he literally was a nickel at Clemson.
I don't know about this one. Don't gloves help you grip the ball a little better? Plus, you could put like pine tar on them or something.
Dude, they've gotten so sticky now. It's a whole different game. The gloves when I was a kid just like had a little bit of tack. Now, have you seen those NFL gloves? Like, dude, it's absurd the grip they have on them now.
So anyway, they could play man or match across, and it's like we're not going to easily hunt Hill or a linebacker. Your best guys are going to be covered by your best case was that Gilbo or Makubo was on your guy, and your worst case was that it was Barron. And so there was no easy places to go for the vast majority of Texas's opponents. Anywhere you were looking on the field, you were not getting that great of a matchup. Even if you're like, oh, my guy can get open, I can get him on Hill a couple times, I can get him on LaFau, I can get him on Makubo a lot. For most teams, that still wasn't like going to get you consistent offense. It was going to be like 50-50, right, or worse, on just picking up a gain. And so that worked super well until it didn't, because Clemson had guys that were actually better than 50-50. Mm-hmm. Like they figured out, like they really got after Gilbo. Eventually, PK just pulled Gilbo out of the game and moved Barron back to nickel. And then they went after, this is actually kind of interesting, they went after Muhammad and not Devin Holmes. I think they might have tested Holmes like once and didn't get anything. And then they went after Muhammad.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, this is great. We got this. And they started roasting Muhammad. So it did not hold up at that level. I mean, they still played pretty good against Clemson. They had a goal line stand that made a huge difference. They had a big turnover, but you could see the cracks starting to form in that game.
Yeah.
Ohio State, they played too high. And Ohio State, for years and years, have been bad at exploiting too high. Because like we would say above, against too high, well, you play four wide. You get the linebackers out of the box and you start picking on them that way. Ohio State has never been very good at that. They've never really wanted to do that. I heard some stories about the first time Michigan beat Ohio State from some people that were there on the Ohio State side. And they were like, the tight end and was so mad at Ryan Day. He's like, they're barely even covering me. What are you doing? For years, they've never really adjusted. So they were able to get away with that on Ohio State.
But it's weird this year because they have the personnel, man, to spread it out with Claire on the inside and all of that too.
They could, but then they can't. I don't know if they can run. It's the thing. Because, Julian, it's hard. Like you were saying, your run game gets so limited unless you have a running quarterback, if you take your tight end out. I don't know if Claire – if he's a decent blocker, that might be pretty lethal.
But Sand's not a runner.
I think that they will often play 12 personnel and hammer teams a little bit because they have some blockers and they have some backs. If they can play four wide with Claire on Texas and still run the ball, then that's probably going to leave with an L, honestly, if they can do that.
I don't believe you, dude. Impossible. Couldn't happen. Texas is the greatest team of all time. Okay, so that's 2024. We, even with that awesome defense, it still got tested. This year, we got some different guys who have different strengths, right? So when we're saying, like, Jelani might not be as good as man, we're not saying Jelani's bad. We're saying Jelani's skill set is weighted more towards other things. And so teams might try to test that. And also, we don't know. Jelani might surprise us, you know.
He might also be bad.
That's true. If we're talking all the possibilities here,
I mean, there's a reason they didn't have him do it last year. I don't know what that reason was, but usually it's
talking about coverage or playing nickel.
Coverage from the nickel. When Jelani played coverage in the nickel, they did not have him do that unless it was like not a slot or not a threatening team. If there was ever a team that was like, hey, we're worried this team is going to throw to the slot, it was Gilbert.
Yeah, but that makes sense to me. To me, when Jelani came in, it felt like more of our big nickel.
Yeah. But if your big nickel becomes your only nickel,
yeah. Cover. Right.
I mean, maybe we haven't really seen it, but
yeah,
it's possible that he's not good at it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's possible. And then Jalen Gilbo moves out to corner. What do you think? Think there's chance that he ends up staying at nickel and somebody else takes over at corner? What are your thoughts?
I don't know. It seems very possible that he'll be a downgrade. If you go like Barron to Gilbo, it's like Texas is definitely going to be a downgrade. Right.
Well, yeah, one was a Thorpe Award winner. So, yeah, I would go ahead and bet that it's going to be a downgrade. It's just what scale.
And the real math of it is that they're going to be more like, hey, Muhammad is our new Barron. So how far is it from Barron to Muhammad? And then how far is it from Muhammad to Gilbo?
Yeah.
And that may not be too bad. I think it will be a downgrade, though. Maybe in both spots. It may be only a – all three coverage spots, I think, could face a marginal downgrade, which just starts to add up after a while, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
We're still good, though, but it's just, you know.
Comparatively, probably not as good. All right, let's look at linebackers. Coaches like Leonga in coverage, and then Hill's big thing is he's been working on coverage.
Yeah, they're good in space at running. If they can play zone and kind of keep things in front of them, they're really good. If they have to actually like kind of match a slot running something quick, then not so good. If you like spread them out and really attack them with like a timing route or an option or something, they're going to get roasted.
But that's why you need that safety over top.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's just about like maintaining a zone and smacking people, then they are like probably both going to be above average, well above average.
Okay. So we're getting spread out. The problem with also getting spread out is the run game. So if all your guys and safeties are focused on that, now you're just dealing in the box. And we're not 100% sure what's going to happen for us at defensive tackle. Just a question mark. Doesn't mean it's good or bad. Just we don't know. So what happens now that the secondary is taken out of the box and the linebacker and the nickel and the safeties are keying more pass? What's the deal now?
That would be Texas's best bet, maybe. Would be like, we're going to play too high, which they may or may not want to do with Akina and Nansen and PK. None of those guys are like too high aficionados, right? But they did it against Ohio State. You could play too high more this year and like just move LaFau and Hill out of the box and say, we dare you to either throw on a conservative coverage or run the ball in a light box. The linebackers are really good at, especially Hill, he can play back in space and still get there against the run as long as the back's not just shooting through a hill, through a gap. But then the question becomes if Texas's D-line can hold up with a light box or not. Yeah. And that's, we got another probably marginal downgrade here, right? From Collins and Broughton and Lole and Norton to whichever of these guys end up being like the two deep on this D tackle room.
Do you feel like it's a, this is a question, like what, how do you feel about it compared to Coburn and Ojemo?
maybe that unit had Sweat and who was the Collins maybe?
I mean, it had Collins, yeah.
I think Sweat and Collins were like the next two guys.
And Sweat, yeah, I'm thinking more front line because they still have the advantage depth. But also, Sweat and Collins hadn't like activated at that point. They're just
Sweat was still pretty good.
He was, but it's like those last years are where they went. Why we talk about Sweat so positively or Collins so positively?
Isn't this was only the year before Sweat blew up though?
It was the year before Sweat and Murphy.
And actually, Murphy was still good. Murphy was at least pretty good all 3 years.
Yeah.
So it was like Ojemo, Coburn. Was that 21 or 22?
It was 3 years ago.
22?
I'm horrible with that. Sure, 22. I just know it was three seasons ago.
The year where they went to match quarters with Patterson?
The year they had eight wins.
Yeah. I mean, that team had sophomore Murphy and almost ready to blow up Sweat. I don't know if they'll even be that good.
Okay.
And yeah, Ojemo and were both drafted, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was trying to see in reference to our run of three defensive tackles, kind of where you think that is.
Was Ojemo even on the team though, or was he already gone?
Ojemo was on the team.
Okay. Yeah, they were for like the last 3 years, they've been so stacked at D-tackle.
That's what I was saying. And that's the weakest one I can think of. So I was trying to compare to them because the other ones are just kind of like no question better.
Like 21 is the worst D-tackle room that he's had, I think, Sark. And it was like, it was Ojemo and Coburn, and they were like still pretty good. And Sweat was not quite there yet. And freshman Murphy, who was actually flashed. And then that was the year they were playing Collins as a D end, and he was kind of awesome at it.
So we also have really good edge room. Why is that not important versus a good spread team, or not as effective versus a really good spread team?
I was going to say it's like useless. It's not useless. It's definitely helpful. The problem is, like, when the team spreads you out four wide, the quarterback can get a really quick picture of what he wants to do. And it's just, you're just not usually getting enough time to get to the quarterback. Like, usually a good pass rush, you're watching the NFL, go pull up your favorite sack artist in the NFL and pull up his sack highlights and then count one Mississippi, two Mississippi for the quarterback and how long it is usually before your favorite sack artist gets to him. And you'll find, with a few exceptions where they just like blow by somebody and the tackle falls on his face, you need to force the quarterback to hold the ball for at least 3 seconds before your pass rush can actually get to him.
And you saw Michael Penix on that throw outside from earlier. What did he do? He saw the matchup, he stepped back, and he threw it. There's no chance for a defensive end to get involved there. And that's the problem when you can matchup hunt that clearly and makes the picture that clear for your quarterback. They don't need all the time to read a concept.
If you're in their face consistently within three all game, it'll start to definitely take a toll. But the other thing that these teams do is they start lining up really quick. And usually their quarterback is more of a dual threat. That's what really unlocks this offense. And so, like, one play, maybe you put an amazing move on the tackle. You're ready to go kill the quarterback. He's already thrown the ball. They line up again real quick. They throw a screen. You have to go chase the guy out to the sideline. Then you got to run over and line up again. It's third and one. All of a sudden, they're like in a power set. They run the ball for 2 yards. Then they're lining up really quick again. They go, they throw. You're catching your breath. You need a little more time to get to the quarterback. He throws it again. You have to chase the guy down the field. Even with Texas's subs, like, it's very, very hard to beat these teams with pass rush unless you can get consistent pressure in the quarterback's face.
Yeah, because not only, like you said, not only are you not getting there, they're working all parts of the field to exhaust you on top of that.
Yeah.
Like an extreme version with Sam Levitt's, not spread necessarily, but it's just running around. Like, you saw what that did to us, yeah. You know. So it's like you can pay attention to that. Even an awesome defensive line is exhausted by that. So that, and likewise too, when we think spread, because of the air raid and the name, we think that like everything means bombs, like everything is four verticals. And that's not the case with these spreads. They're trying to pick you apart horizontally, a lot of that kind of stuff, a lot of lateral movement, a lot of screens, and then they'll go over the top or at the middle. But it's a lot of like having to read, stop, and neutralize the defensive lines. And what, you know, the classic spread mantra is the giant slayer, where they wanted to take away these advantages that teams had in the trenches. So defensive lines could get you historically. Well, if you spread everyone out, it was designed to neutralize that. So it still has that advantage baked in. Good on spread, Ian.
So let's just wrap up real quick.
Okay.
Teams that can get four wide from 11 personnel with a dual threat quarterback is, in my opinion, the highest form of offense and extremely difficult to stop in college. And maybe the two most useless positions for countering it are edge and inside linebacker, which happen to be the two spots where it's like, Texas is awesome. Yeah. Look at these edges and inside linebackers. You got potential marginal downgrades at defensive tackle. And defensive tackle is extremely valuable for beating the spread because you can actually get and affect the quarterback faster than 3 seconds if your D tackles, if they can't block your D tackles in the pass rush. So that's a problem.
Or also, if your DTs can stop the run and put the offenses in the third and whatevers, and then you actually have a chance to pass rush.
You're getting ahead of me, Connor.
Oh, sorry.
Stealing all my points. Stealing my jokes. And then also, there's that. But there's also, if your D tackles are really good, you can play your linebackers out in space, or you can sub package and get away with it. Because it's like, whatever. We're going to make our linebackers' job really easy. So we could play dime, or we could just make it easy for them. So D tackles are extremely valuable. We don't know how good Texas is there. Coverage guys are essential. You want at least three, and four is better. Texas is looking at probably a marginal downgrade at four out of five positions in the secondary when it comes to coverage, right? Is that fair?
Yeah. This was like an all-time secondary last year, so sure.
Yeah. That's it. That these are all very problematic. And here's the other thing, which I mentioned in the thread when I wrote this on Inside Texas. Oklahoma's receivers suck. And Mississippi State, maybe they're good, but it's like it's Mississippi State. So it's extremely possible that people could be all year saying, like, Ian, you were worried about the defense. Aren't you an idiot? The defense has been awesome this year. And you never see these cracks form because the schedule does not have this kind of team. And then you play LSU in the SEC championship game or Auburn, like maybe. I don't know if those teams – just bear with me. And then, like, maybe they drop 30 points. Maybe Texas wins, but they give up 30 or something. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, what was that? Well, it's okay. We just need to adjust. We've seen this defense be great all year. Just let them adjust.
Everyone has an off game.
But then you get, like, USC or Levitt or Clemson, God forbid, in the playoffs. And this is a huge problem. And you get beat and you get knocked out. And RT's Manning's going to drop a 50 pieces out the window because he didn't get enough games.
Yeah, I thought he said 50. When he said 50 pieces, I thought he meant a 50 point game. And I was like, that's a very reasonable take. Like, he can get one 50 point game, but he's talking 50 touchdowns.
Which of those do you think is more likely?
That Arch has a 50 point game?
Or that Texas scores 50 points in a game, or that Arch scores 50 touchdowns. Which do you think is more likely?
50 points in a game, even though it's tricky because Sark auto-regulates.
Yes.
So once the score goes up, Sark sits on it, and he turns into a power run team. So the irony of all gas, no brakes is it's not true, like as far as scoring goes. Maybe all gas, no brakes in the first half. But when Sark turns much more into an NFL style coach in that regard.
All gas, no brakes. He always tried to explain it as more of a mantra for how you attack life than as a strict philosophy. But also, anytime a coach has like a mantra and an ethos that's like, this is who we are, we're going to hammer this, blah, 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 you can always be sure that the reason for the mantra is to forestall doubt.
Yeah.
Like this has started to make me nervous when we keep getting reports where the Texas secondary coaches are like, we love this room. There's so much talent on this team. Just we're gonna turn these guys into monsters. And it just like that sounds good. And then you hear it a couple more times and you're like, why are you?
Yeah, this seems like a concerted effort to convince me of something, you know.
Stop saying that.
Just yeah. Yeah. Or the worst is if they like bring it up without prompting, you know, it's like, okay, there's clearly some like message here, but yeah, that can happen.
I saw this great version of it. I think it was Jeff Collin. I can't remember. This defensive coordinator was at Mississippi State and he had this mantra and they were like pumping him up on the broadcast. And they're like, it's all about aggressive defense. It's all about smashing people in the face. It's all about attacking people. It's all blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, okay. And then you watch the team, and they were playing, like, the most basic keep them in front of us defense, you know? Like, drop seven into coverage, match your guys right, stay, keep them in front of you, make them earn it their way down the field. And then he's, like, obviously trying to pump up his players to do these, like, banal love of the process tasks when ultimately they're playing, like, the most boring – you know, dude,
there's no population that is more prone to cliches than football coaches. I don't know what it is. Like, I see it all the time. It cracks me up. Not even our coaches, just like the high school coaches I follow. They'll just post the most basic 13-year-old like motivational quote. And you can tell it like really is resonating with them. You know, like they can read Rise and Grind and be like, you know what? Yeah, we should rise and grind. And it cracks me up. And if you see like, and you know, in the beginning of clinics, they'll just list five words of what their team is. It's always like toughness, respond to adversity, lightning fast. And it's like, no coach has ever said, we want to be weak. We want to be slow. There's no point in using these words. They don't mean anything in football, but everyone does it. No one's like, I want a slow, weak, undisciplined team.
It's not just football. Like, I think corporate world is like that. I've done a lot of time in church world. And church world regularly has like, this is who we are. Here's our mission statements.
Yeah.
We are a people who do these things or whatever. Yeah. It's great. So they kept changing it. And then they would ask us what our five core things are. And it's like, I don't know. Y'all changed it again. something to do with loving our neighbors and loving God.
Yeah. But that's the point. Is like, it becomes if everyone's doing it, it becomes meaningless. And it's just this weird exercise that we see that happens.
I don't know. I think when your
mission statement is different than five words. Companies would like good mission statements, but there's no one in church world is going to be like, we need to hate and sin. It's like, we know the values here, you know? So it's like, that's my thing. It's just like, it's repetitive. We know we need to be tough, disciplined, whatever. We get it. All right. Anyways,
people do fall back on that. Like if you keep preaching it all the time, then people will fall back on it, you know?
Yeah. I just don't know where they're missing that elsewhere. I mean, that's just like, it's in every part of the culture. It's just
for
like,
it's for a reason. I laugh and shake my head, especially the ones that the Oklahoma D-line coach does.
What does he do?
He's like Creed Bratton. And he's like, he has like some acronym.
Oh yeah.
Like, you came up with the acronym before you came up with what the words were.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that most people do that.
Well, his are like, he's like, our team is brave. We are businesslike. We are.
I know. And the funny one is when they don't have clean words, they have to like use a part of a phrase at that point.
He's the worst. We could do a whole show where we just go through his one at a time that he puts on Twitter.
Yeah. That's the thing with me. It's just like, it cracks me up how much motivational quotes are in the football world. That's what I see all the time. It's good. Don't get me wrong. Motivation's not wrong, but there's a point where it ends up meaning nothing. But you know who's really good at motivation? The Florida Gators, Ian. But before we go on to that, let's hear a word from David McClellan.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor. And I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach. And he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner and schedule a one-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
Thank you, LC. We take LC out of his little box to read his ads, and then we put him right back in every day. All right, so we're going to look at the Florida Gators. This is an exciting team that, you know, everybody in the preseason is interested, for good or for bad. This is absolutely kind of captivating the national audience. Ian did a really good breakdown. I was reading it, and I was like, man, this is a long post. You really went into Florida Gators here. Did you do this on War Game too?
Yeah. If you read the War Game version, there's even another entire section where I complain about how they got rid of the Gator Bait chant in 2020.
Just a little threw that in. Thank you. Yeah. All right. So first things first, Napier's in a weird spot. The fan base wants to fire him. They're playing a crazy bad schedule. Crazy good schedule.
Yeah.
There was a gauntlet, not as bad as we thought it was going to be ultimately, but they're going to have the same thing coming up. Anyways, Napier's dead man walking. I remember preparing for that video, and, you know, I study all the fan bases and their writers and all that stuff. And
it's Urban Meyer's cutting documentaries where he's like, hey, Florida fans, remember when I was the head coach and it was great?
Yeah, I remember. And also it was Lane Kiffin. Yeah. And I like Napier. I've always liked him. I always thought he was a good coach. But what he did smart is was it Graham Mertz, right, was the name of their starter?
Yeah. Graham
Mertz. He pulled in the five-star card when it started to get sketchy, and then we saw what Lagway was able to do, particularly in the deep passing game, and that reinvigorated the whole fan base and, more importantly, the donor base. So instead of paying for Napier's buyout, let's just take that money. Now that we got a young quarterback, let's just take that money and put it in to NIL and recruiting. And that's what they've done. But this year is the real test. Everyone's expecting a breakout here. But once again, they're going to face a crazy gauntlet of schedules. There's a chance, you know, this is a 4 or 5 loss team, and they're still one of the better teams in the country.
Yeah. Very difficult schedule again. But they are, yeah, you said it.
LSU, Miami, Texas, A&M, Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee. Dude. Ugh.
It's like there's like at LSU, at A&M, and at Ole Miss on the road schedule is not the worst, but not great.
Yeah, it's just the sheer volume. Even where it's at, it's just they keep
Georgia's in the where do they play that game? Tallahassee?
Yeah, somewhere in Florida, like North Florida, right?
Yeah. Why am I blanking on this?
The cocktail party or whatever?
Yeah.
And then they have an emotional game versus Florida State, too, which is Florida State fell off the map, but it's still like a rivalry game. So they have a lot of emotional and high-intensity games peppered throughout
this whole thing.
Okay. Ian has the Space Force concept, and basically it boils down to there's positions on the football field where one-on-ones are common, a left tackle versus an edge, a corner versus an outside receiver, those kind of things. That's where you need your athletes to be most dominant because they're going to be on an island a lot. And so we'll look at Florida's Space Force and what they have. Fair, you want to add anything to my description of your concept?
D-tackle doesn't super fit in, but I added it. Doesn't quite fit into the space concept, but I added it. These are the positions where having elite human specimens really stands out. You can have like an elite specimen at inside linebacker, and it's just not going to have the same impact as at these positions.
Right. Stay specimen a couple more times as we go throughout it too, man. Very scientific, dude. All right, left tackle.
Austin Barber. Pretty good player. Probably similar to Trey Zun. Or
that's A&M, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a Texas equivalent. Texas has had so many years where they either have like an amazing dude or kind of a bum.
Or nothing, yeah.
Maybe like Christian Jones, but a little more pass pro and a little less run blocking dominance. Good Chris Jones, the older Chris Jones.
Does Georgia get better placement of neutral site games than anyone in the world? If Georgia and Florida is going to Atlanta?
That's interesting. I don't know how much of a difference that makes, though, for Florida. Like, Atlanta's so easy to get to.
It is, and it's closer, but it's still like Georgia. It feels like Georgia gets to play in Atlanta like 19 times a year.
Yeah.
The Florida-Texas game will be at the Swamp. Yeah, Florida-Texas. We were talking about Georgia, Florida, and Jacksonville, but that's not even correct because it's in Atlanta, according to Blake.
Atlanta is like the capital of the Deep South, I think. So.
Yeah, but.
Maybe his point to get there.
Yeah, I get it, but I'm saying it's still advantage for Georgia just location-wise.
Yeah.
All right. Outside receiver, very important position.
Oh, he says it's in Tampa in 27. That's a pretty good. I think Florida actually comes out ahead in that. A lot easier to get to Florida to Atlanta than it is to get to Tampa because you could drive from North Florida to Atlanta really easily, but Atlanta to Tampa is a little more of a trek.
I went to Panama City Beach, I don't know, years ago, and for a high school trip after high school or something. And then it was a late night. So we were in like a Waffle House at like 3 a.m. And
great start to a story.
Yeah. And so, well, it's not a crazy story, but I assumed, you know, everyone was going to be like Florida fans. I've never seen an even distribution of Georgia and Florida gear. Everyone in there, but like 50-50 was Georgia and Florida. I just didn't realize how much North Georgia fans are in Northern Florida. Some of them are on vacation, but also a lot of them have betrayed their own state and like Georgia, which I never understand for you people that are OU fans living in Texas. Come on, guys. What are we doing? You can't do that. All right. Started van from UCLA. Where is Eugene Wilson? Oh, he's from Florida, right? He's been on Florida. That's why I recognize the name.
Yeah, he was there last year. I think either him or Elijah Badger missed the Texas game, I think.
Okay.
Maybe both. I don't remember.
But the point is here, you want deep threats because that's what Lagway's superpower is right now. He's the best deep passer in the game. So you could have like a million receivers. If they're not deep threats, you're not maximizing Lagway. So do they have those deep threats?
Maybe. A little unclear. This will probably determine whether they're like 7 or 8 wins and like, oh, they're good, but they couldn't quite. And like winning 9 and 10 games and going to the playoffs is that question.
Yeah, I'm trying to skip.
Texas, actually.
I'm trying to skip these moving GIFs because they demonetize us. Sorry.
of clips of Lagway dropping bombs on people, yeah. And he's awesome at it.
Yeah, if I play this clip individually in a GIF, it's fine. But for whatever reason, when it's just running, the sensor will flag it. Mm. Okay. And then Edge. I remember they played like 900 players on Edge last year. It was their rotation was wild. When I was breaking that team down, there were like 6 guys that would play Edge for them. Tyreek Sapp was a player. Pyburn going to LSU. I didn't even realize that. But Pyburn was a good player. George Gums. They had a bunch of guys. They just rotated a ton.
Pyburn was like a dream Todd Orlando Edge.
He's very Sam-like too. Like he was a cool player.
He didn't actually rush the passer that much or that well. But he was good enough at it to play Edge. And then they could drop him out for all their simulated blitzes.
Yeah.
And he was like picking people off and tipping passes. He was awesome in coverage.
Yeah. So how do you feel about Edge?
Okay, because Tyreek Sapp is kind of awesome. And Gums is kind of good. Ron Roberts is the DC there. He was Dave Aranda's mentor. And then he worked for Aranda as the DC when they were awesome originally at Baylor. Mm-hmm. And then Aranda fired him as kind of a scapegoat when things fell off. And so he went back to Napier because he'd been with Napier at Louisiana. And the thing with Robert, he's kind of like Orlando. He's like what Orlando was trying to be. His teams are best when he has blitzers that are awesome. So like having a great edge, he'll take advantage of it, but he's really going to cook you with awesome blitzers.
Was he the Terrell Bernard, Jalen Petrie?
Yeah, that's in the article. I mentioned that exact team.
Okay. Yeah, that was an awesome team. Okay, and then defensive tackle. Did they return? Yeah, here you go, Behemoth. They moved on. Damn, Desmond Watson, what a blast. What a fun player to see on the field. Okay, so how are they looking with what they do have at defensive tackle?
They got Banks back, who's like kind of like Alfred Collins zone, where it's like if he'd left, he would have been a late-round pick, but he's got all this potential. So he came back, and there's a chance he could make a jump like Collins did and go way higher. They've got Jamari Lyons as a nose, who's much smaller. Then they have another massive person waiting in the wings. Michael Boyreau, maybe. I don't know how it's pronounced. 6'5", 355 pounds. Coming up in the ranks. They're in pretty good shape here.
Yeah, they got some size.
Mostly because of Banks. Banks is the problem.
And then matching up one-on-one with outside receivers, Wingo, maybe more. What do they have at cornerback?
Always solid here. Devin Moore and Dijon Johnson. I can't remember which guys played against Texas and which guys have been solid last year. They had to play a bunch of guys. I think Cormani McLean, who transferred in, Cormani McLean was like a five-star. Mm-hmm. Goes to Colorado. Mm-hmm. He hates it. He gets into it with the Sanders family. He leaves. He has to like walk on at Florida after he transfers. Played some last year. I kind of think he was really good. But he seems to be more like in there too deep. He doesn't seem to have quite nailed down a starting job, which I don't know what the disconnect is. I defer to their staff, but he seems really good. If you can't crack the lineup, these other guys must be like really reliable or well-rounded.
And then, of course, quick breakdown on Lagway.
Lagway, awesome. 6'3", 242, fast. He's kind of like, I'm just a little bit hesitant to say this. A little Cam Newton-y. I'm trying to think of another like just huge, powerful quarterback that would be a good comp. You want to help me out here, Connor?
No, I don't think you need a comp. I think it's just like Lagway, you know?
Well,
I'm not a huge comp guy.
Our viewers may or may not know Lagway, even though he came out of Texas, right?
Yeah, he's a deep passer.
I'll tell you what Lagway is. Lagway is what a bunch of people thought Jaquindon Jackson was.
Yeah, but both of the – and you're going to point out that Lagway can run, but you're still giving him too much legs credit with those comps.
Well, you're conveniently going to skip over my gifts that would prove.
No, we'll make sure to show. We won't show the gift, but we will describe you his running ability, which he does have. They just don't turn to it at that level.
Well, he was nursing a hamstring for most of the year.
Yeah, but even if you watch Lagway and High, it's just we're dealing with a Jaquindon Jackson, Cam Newton level of runner.
Okay. He's capable of it.
He is capable of it.
They don't do it that much, but he could do it.
He can run. I don't think when we're talking Cam Newton, he's not at that level.
Not quite Cam Newton. Cam Newton is about as good as it gets for like huge fast people.
Yeah.
But he's, let me put it this way. He could, if he played tight end, he would be like Jatavion Sanders level athlete.
Okay. Tight end mobile. That's a type. That's literally a quarterback trait when they talk about if a quarterback's tight end mobile.
Good tight end mobile.
Yeah. So he can run, but really he's a deep ball passer right now. And then he has a pretty high interception rate, 4.7, and he has a sack rate of 6.3. So this thing about Lagway is going to pop if you watch his highlights, and there's going to be four or five times a game where you're going to be like, wow. The difference is he was young. He doesn't have field command yet. So in the intermediate range and the short ranges, he was not very strong. So he was almost all single read, and man, he could kill you with those single reads. But this year is about Lagway quarterbacking at all levels of the field. That's going to be the big thing. And Ian says it, field generalship. That's going to be an important aspect for Lagway beyond throwing the bombs, even though throwing the bombs is a huge, huge advantage he holds.
Yeah.
Maturity at safety is really important to you too. Do they have maturity at safety?
They have the potential for maturity at safety. They got guys back that were like starting to come on last year. And they also like, everybody might remember that Florida had this like baby faced defensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, maybe if you shaved your beard.
Yeah, sure.
He was like a young 30s.
I don't even know what I look like without a beard, dude. I've had a beard for like 6 years.
Austin Armstrong. He looks like Austin Armstrong. I'm sure of it. He had all this complicated new modern scheme that they were trying to do at Florida, but they were like just botching a lot of it. And then they kind of edged him out and just put Ron Roberts in charge. And Ron Roberts was like, okay, guys, we're going to get really good at quarters. And I'm going to teach you how to play quarters a few different ways, and we'll be really good at it. And we'll have some flexibility that way. And they got way better.
Way better. Yeah, they were overcomplicating. The young DC was trying. Remember, there were articles, the defensive whiz kid. Look how young he is, youngest coordinator, youngest defensive coordinator. And he was like trying to live up to his like, I'm real smart. And he ended up, and he could be real smart. It doesn't matter how smart you are. It's how smart you can communicate to your players. And often he would confuse the hell out of his own players. So even if the schemes were sound, the players had no clue what they were doing. And making that change was huge, simplifying that defense. And just letting Florida athletes be Florida athletes is really important too.
Sheriff Denson at nickel is the big one. He's like a promising blitzer, which is huge because remember what he did with Jalen Peter? And just a good player overall. That's like one of two guys I've identified where if this guy ends up being really good, then Florida could be pretty scary.
Okay, so we know the passing game. We've looked at that, the space. But Florida's not just trying to pass all the time. It's not a spread offense. They like to get big. They're pro style, and that's
and they don't really their space force doesn't like super stand out. Like looking at their space force, you're not like this is a big time SEC contender.
Yeah,
they look like they're just a competitive SEC team from that perspective.
But Napier does like 12 personnel, meaning two tight ends, right? They like a lot of run concepts. They like a lot of gap scheme stuff, a lot of pull stuff, and they like to be aggressive. So that's a big part. So even, you know, Lagway hitting bombs, which can also be facilitated by their ability to run because the play action is there. So also what you have to worry about if Florida is good, a reason they'll be good is because they're able to push people around. So here's a quick peek at their offensive line and tight ends and running backs. It's a pretty big group of fellas.
Huge.
Yeah, at most positions. So left tackle is 6 foot six, left guard 6'3", center 6'5", 6'6", right guard, 6'5", right tackle, 6'6", tight end, 6'5", tight end, 6'1", running back, and then a 5'11".
You got to do the weights, though. The left tackle back. The left tackle is 322, left guard 316, center 294, right guard 362, right tackle 326. Here's the real big one, too. The tight ends go 272 and 260.
Yeah.
And the running backs are 227 and 209.
209, yeah.
So they have big linemen, but the real killer is that their tight ends and their running backs.
But this has got to be one of the biggest groups of cores in the country, if not the biggest, right? Like,
especially with the tight end running back angle.
Yeah.
They're so big.
Yeah, so that's – this might be the biggest team in the country in that regard. So they'll want to do it. I'd have to think, not us, because we don't have backs that are that big. We don't have tight ends that are that big.
It's like going through the usual suspects in my mind.
Yeah, trying to think through Georgia and all that.
Yeah.
But if they're not the biggest, they're going to be top three, just reading these numbers. So bully ball's on the table, right?
Oh, yeah. It's the main course. It's the menu.
All right. Watch as I scroll, guys. I'll wait for it to restart. Here is DJ Lagway running the ball. Okay. Good stride.
Before the hamstring pull.
Before the hamstring pull. So he has good stride. They will absolutely be able to run it. I would say with DJ Lagway's injury history and his ability to throw deep, you'll see those run games featured on like specific matchups that we talk about a lot. So, you know, there might be three games where you don't see him run at all. And then in a big game, he's going to run 10 times. So that's the big thing you got to worry about.
Napier is much like Sark in that he's really going to keep his powder dry. He doesn't care what the margin is.
Yeah.
He's going to control a game and get out with a win. And it's not like he can be conservative with stuff like that.
Cool. And any final pieces here? We talked about the defense a little bit, getting shored up.
They are going to try to bully Texas. They present very few of the challenges that we spent the first half of the show describing with spread offense. Like, could try that against Texas, but that'll probably be like a very small component of their offense. What they're absolutely going to want to do against Texas is get big and 12 personnel. Maybe Texas is unlucky enough that that's the game that they're like, we're going to run Lagway 15 times this week.
Yeah.
We're going to get this win in the swap. for a resume. And honestly, if Florida comes in against Texas and they get big and they run Lagway 15 times, like I think Texas's ability to stop the run starts to fade at that point.
War of attrition style.
That's too much to just shut down unless you're insanely dominant. I don't think Texas is going to be like
one. They can also hit the quick strike too on you.
Yes.
You know, if you get too obsessed with the run, they can, in Lagway, I'm telling you, he's like 50%, which is crazy. He can hit it deep too. So whenever you get obsessed with stopping that run, he can go over the top. And like we said, 50% of the time, it's a true 50-50 ball with Lagway. So that'll be the trick. So Florida Gators, really interesting team, like we said, to watch. We're not 100% sure to tell you, hey, they have all the pieces to fully maximize, but, man, there's some possibilities here, right, when you have Lagway and you have that size.
Definite 9-2, 9-3, 10-2 potential. Maybe SEC championship game, depending on how things break out with that, like the standings, you know. Definitely a potential playoff team, and definitely one of the biggest threats on the Texas schedule.
And we play them at home after we embarrassed them last year, so they're going to be fully motivated. Texas is going to motivate them because we're a good team, but last year, I'm sure that left a bitter taste in their mouth too. So,
also, to put a bow on our spread conversation, I think there is an option Texas could use that would solve most of the problems I explained in the first half of this show. And I will write about it later this week.
There we go.
That'd be cool. Before I talk about it Thursday, maybe next Wednesday, we'll see.
Stay tuned, guys. We appreciate you guys for hanging out, learning football with us, and getting into the weeds. We enjoy it. This was IT Live, and it was brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Have a great Wednesday, y'all. Peace.